I'm taking you back into the real world. I don't depend on AI to actually like teach me things, but I allow it to aggregate where I should go and learn. And so that's the experience that I built into using it.
A lot of times stars are self-learners. We're the ones that kind of go through and we're just like, what is this new thing? And as you know, some people are running away from things, I'm running to them.
You think about the experts and who they are and what they're doing, they're writing books, sharing their information, and they're also reading them. So if you're reading what they're reading, then you're learning what they're learning. And how you make the information valuable is applying your own lived life and learned lessons to the information you're sharing.
Hello, and welcome to Paperless Pathways, a podcast for stars by stars. I'm your host, Lashana Lewis, chair of the Stars Advisory Council. This season, we've been exploring how artificial intelligence is reshaping the future of work and how stars are not just adapting to these changes, but leading the way. Today's episode is called Build Your Own Curriculum, and we're diving into how generative AI is transforming the way we learn. For so long, education has followed a traditional path, degrees, timelines, and one-size-fits-all type of structures. But what happens when you can design your own learning journey? When you can tailor what you learn to your goals, your pace, and your lived experience? In an AI-powered world, learning becomes more flexible, more personalized, and more accessible. And for stars, this opens up a powerful opportunity to take ownership of their goals, building skills in real time, and applying them in ways that create real impact. Joining me today is Aaron Riddick, founder and CEO of ChatBlackGPT. Aaron is helping lead this shift by creating tools and pathways that make AI-driven learning more accessible and more inclusive. Together, we'll explore what it means to build your own curriculum, how AI can act as a learning co-pilot, and how stars can use these tools to design their own path forward. Let's get into it. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today and talking a little bit about ChatBlackGPT, a little bit about you and your background and all of that good stuff. And we will get started with the first question that I have. And I usually try to ask this. So everyone, tell us a little bit about you and yourself and your super impressive background that I also took a spy on before we got talking.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that lovely intro. So name's Aaron Riddick. I come from Michigan, but lived in Seattle for 10 years. That's where I started out my journey in tech. And I was able to work at different companies that you've probably heard of and all paperless. So my journey has been really marked by having the gall and the audacity to try to do things even when people say that you can't or you shouldn't even try. And yeah, I would say that's kind of how I encompass my whole career. Just somebody who takes chances and risks and likes to challenge the norm. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, as usual, I'm going to go off script just a little bit, just to ask you a question, because again, I'm super curious, like, how did you get involved with like AI? Was it something that you kind of worked on and you're just like, I want to do my own? Or was it just kind of like, hey, you know, we have this thing and you're just kind of like super curious and started diving in? I'm just kind of really interested in like the nuts and bolts of how you even fell into the sector.
Yeah. So artificial intelligence really came to me after I got laid off. I was hearing a whole bunch about Llama. I was working at Meta at the time, and I didn't quite understand all of the jazz about it. And so when I got laid off, I finally started paying deeper attention and realized that AI was pretty awesome at the time, at least for what kind of things it was promising to do. And so for me, I had a lot of time on my hands post layoff, you know, obviously prioritizing mental health. I was in therapy. I took some time off, like those are important things as well when you're going through something like that. But I am a person who tends to use learning as a way to kind of distract from other things. And so being a little bit sad, you know, I actually spent weeks just deep diving artificial intelligence, ended up earning a few certifications, and decided to start building it myself when I saw some glaring issues. So my journey with AI started out like just pretty much getting tired of hearing about it and not knowing, and empowering myself to learn about it as much as I could on my own.
I mean, it's excellent. Obviously, you're a star, and a lot of times stars are self-learners. We're the ones that kind of go through and we're just like, what is this new thing? And as you know, some people are running away from things. I'm running to them. Mm-hmm. I remember when like automated vehicles started coming to the LA area, and people were like, I'm scared to get in this thing. And I was like, how do I get a promo code? Like, I want to get in here. I want to like fidget around and see what things are. And like after a while, I started being kind of like this unofficial ambassador to other people that like, this is what you do. You get in the app and you want to set this up. And did you know you can do these other things? So, you know, being into it is obviously where we end up kind of almost indirectly teaching people how to use it. So with that said, you know, when you hear like the phrase build your own curriculum, when it's in today's society, how are we using kind of AI to help implement something like that?
Yeah. So I feel like one thing that artificial intelligence is really good for is helping you figure out what the most direct path is to what you're trying to achieve or accomplish. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times things, when you look it up on your own, may be a little bit broad, or you're not sure if it's exactly relevant to what you're trying to learn about or execute. And with AI, it's just, you can build your own type of curriculum that is very targeted. So I feel like artificial intelligence is able to help set on the right path sooner and something more narrow and specific. So I use it in that way when I'm building out my own learning path.
Yeah. And with that, do you feel like it's kind of putting people on an even keel when it comes to like who has access to like what they learn and how they learn and things of that nature? Like, what are your thoughts behind that?
Well, I'm going to assume that there's teachers out there that are using the same systems to build curriculums for their classes. And I like to look at it as, what's the difference between them doing it and me doing that? So basically, I like to like surface a topic, ask it questions about that topic, ask it to list the top 15 books if I want to become an expert on that topic, and say, okay, build a curriculum based off of these top 15 books. You know, there may be a PDF or something that you can use to even build your own quizzes and questions and test yourself on the material. So, I mean, it's like I put myself in a teacher's shoes. Even if I don't know something, how would I teach somebody else how to do it? And I think a lot of times when people are trying to learn something, if they just empathize with themselves and envision them teaching another person, it can often help lead to better outcomes.
And I mean, that's a great segue into talking about like the traditional pathway that people are used to with, you know, sitting in a classroom and learning like and a lot of the degree-based institutions. Like, what do you see are like some of the other limitations? Like, I'll instead of asking you all the questions, I'll pipe up a few things. For me, it's pace, you know. I feel like some things I'm really quick on. I'm like, okay, got it. Ready to go to the next one, ready to go to the next one. I don't want to wait, which is, you know, to the disdain of many of my instructors, that was pretty much how I was. I was already done with, you know, chapter one in the first couple of days when they were just like, we're not going to get to that till next week, LaShawna. So what are some of the limitations that you see, or that you're just like, you know what, this can actually kind of break through and allow people to, you know, advance in a way in this technology?
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with someone talking about why I didn't like going to college and, you know, some of the things that stopped me from finishing. And people are different. And I have a extreme hypersensitivity to smells, visual things. So if I'm sitting in a classroom and there's someone next to me who just didn't take a shower or just came from the gym, like I can smell all of that, or even someone's breath. Like I'm very sensitive about smells, and those things can nauseate me. People tapping their pencil, somebody repeatedly raising their hands without really adding to the conversation, someone repeatedly getting up and going to the door, back and forth, or people just not caring and talking. Like those things all coming down together for somebody who's neurodivergent like myself, I can't focus and much less function in a learning environment with that many layers of distraction. And, it didn't work for me. So I think that the way you can learn online, and even with, you know, COVID happening and realizing you could do a lot of things online, I think it allows for people like me to take a step back and do self-guided learning, but in an environment that isn't going to be distracting to multiple senses. So I think like it's definitely different, you know, especially when you're self-guided, but college is not, and university and all that, it's not for everyone. So you have to look for other ways.
Yeah, especially, and as a fellow neurodivergent, I hear you on all of those things. Mm-hmm. And even especially weather. I am very sensitive to weather. And I ended up going to a school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which you're from Michigan, so you know where that is. And it was like 300 inches of snow every year. And I'm just like, because I get cold very easily. I stay cold all the time. And I was just like sometimes trying to make it across campus in the middle of winter with 6 foot, you know, snow banks was not necessary.
Ideal. Yeah, that's hard.
So yeah, those are like all excellent things to keep in mind. And you kind of went into another thing that I was going to talk about too, about, you know, designing their own learning journey for STARS specifically, and also neurodivergent folks, to be able to, you know, go through and be able to set up an environment that's very comfortable for you and very conducive for the way that you learn and the way that you advance.
Break into AI with Higher Human. Powered by LaunchCode, get free self-paced training, build real skills, and connect with employers ready to hire. Start today at hirehuman.ai.
I like to switch a little bit and talk kind of adjacent to that about using AI kind of like as your co-pilot, as your assistant. So to speak, in your learning journey, and like, what are some ways that people could utilize a lot of this in order to like do many of the things that you were talking about? Like, I was noticing when I used it that every time I would ask it a question, it would give me this, the chat, Black GPT, it would give me like this list of resources that I could go to and books. And I was really, really glad to see like one person that I'm starting to become good friends with was one of the books that was recommended. And it's Minda Hearts with the memo. So I was like, good to see even recent things being added to it. So if you even want to talk about specifically what you've designed with Chat Black GPT, I'd love to hear a little bit about that too.
Yeah, I mean, some of the problems that I noticed, like even when you're asking for resources, they weren't very diverse. If you ask at the top 10 most important voices in America right now, it's probably not going to be a very diverse top 10. And so just coming across things like that, I knew that Chat Black GPT was necessary. And in building it, I wanted to make sure that it surfaced resources that were authored by Black authors, Black scientists, Black artists, but Black people who understand the culture, who live the day-to-day lives of Black people. When you're asking AI about something, you're learning. So for me, it's like, I have no incentive for people to stay using the tool or continually like be paying attention to the tool because it's free. Even the version that I built with my engineering team, not the customizable through OpenAI, is free. It doesn't cost anything. It's like a big research project, capstone, love letter, and it works. But it's designed to put you back into the real world and go pick up a book, go look up this article, go look up this white paper or this research study. And, you know, it's probably going to be written by somebody of color or a Black person. But the point is, I'm taking you back into the real world. I don't depend on AI to actually like teach me things, but I allow it to aggregate where I should go and learn. And so that's the experience that I built into using it. So you're always going to see most likely books suggested, maybe even after every prompt, to try to help you deepen your learning on your own.
I love that. And I was really pleasantly surprised because, you know, we talk a lot about AI in general. We're talking about it this year on the podcast, and specifically about how there will be hallucinations mm-hmm. about books and reference sources that don't actually exist, or it's, you know, incorrectly quoted from some article somewhere, and, you know, they attribute it incorrectly. And then as a result, you have all of this information based off of an assumption that's given. Whereas, you know, when I was going and looking through and asking and getting prompts, going back and forth with Chat Black GPT, mm-hmm. it was giving me like actual books that are rooted in a lot of the subject, even if it was adjacent to it, or said, you know, maybe you can do a little bit more research and here are some, you know, four or five. I think every time it gave me about four or five books, which is great. It's better than just having like the one one book. And with that said, I felt like, you know, it was kind of very different than an experience I would have if I was searching using a traditional search engine. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how you try to make it not basically duplicate anything that you would find in those type of search engine results?
I mean, I don't have anything special particular about like who it's going to surface. It's dynamic, mm-hmm. which means it's just going to pull from whatever access it has from however many large language models are chained together. It's just like there's deepened contextual information within certain topics that I work with historians to make sure are accurate, especially with Black history or anything to do with cultural events or things that are normally suppressed in other large language models. But like the information, the only criteria that I really have is that it's authored by a person of color, and it doesn't work every time. It's not exclusive. But yeah, so if you go to Google and you say, you know, find me 10 Black authors about this topic, it might be the person who paid the most advertising, not the person who has the most relevant information from what you're trying to learn. So, you know, a lot of these models are switching into some of those territories. So I think it's going to take something remaining dynamic and not motivated by purchasing ads to be a little bit more fair. And that's what I'll try to continue to make available for the public. But yeah, so that's how it's different. And you don't really buy your way to the top with AI the way that I have it set up.
Yeah, so no pay-to-play model, which is good because that's where you get kind of, you know, to the root and the sources from people who probably did a lot of research on something.
Yeah.
Worked on something for a really long time to create the book. And they might not be, you know, at the top of the list because they didn't want to pay for the SEO dollars.
Yeah.
With that said, if you are talking to a star who was just like, I want to kind of build my own curriculum where I'm able to, you know, kind of utilize a lot of these resources to be able to, you know, stack it accordingly, where would they start? What would you say? Hey, you know, this is kind of some of the essential things that you need to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I play around with prompts a lot. So I do a lot of like role playing. So let's say that I wanted to become an expert on like baking a cake. Mm-hmm. I would ask AI, like, what are the top cake baking schools and academies in the US or around the world? And it would list probably them. And I would go to those sites and I would look at their classes and their curriculums and what they have to offer, because they want you to enroll. So they'll show what they're going to teach you in each class. And then you can copy and paste that list of what you'll learn back over into ChatGPT and say, find me the books that would most likely be required readings in these classes. And then you're almost like making a mirror of the top curriculum anyway, and then it can recommend or find the books, and then you can just tell it, hey, do this again, be more specific. And sometimes they have students and forums that are public where it you can find out what books they're reading. Sometimes their whole classes are on YouTube. You can see what the required material is. And then you go back to ChatGPT or whatever you're using and you say, okay, if I were to get a quiz or a class built from this material, like what would that look like? And then have it build out, oh, you would read all these chapters and it would give you a quiz that's this long. And it's almost like you're asking it, what would happen if, and then it's just starting to build it out. And if you take it upon yourself to purchase that book, like a PDF version, and you start reading it, you can use AI to give you your own tests and quizzes, you know? And it's like, that's what you're doing in school. The thing you would be missing out on is like peer evaluation, getting feedback from a teacher directly. But from what I heard, sometimes you'll end up in a class and the teacher don't want to talk to you. They just want to know when your assignment is done. Or your peers aren't really that engaged or care to give you like robust feedback. They're just using AI themselves. So it's like, those are some things you're missing out on. But again, especially if you're learning about something like something you can do with your hands, you're going to find out on your own if you're any good at it eventually. But that's what I would do to start.
Awesome. Well, one of the things I was thinking about was like, say a star is doing all of that. How do they validate like what they've learned, like without getting some sort of formal credential? Like, how do you show that you've actually understood and comprehended and, you know, advanced with whatever it is that you've put together?
You don't have to get a degree to get a certificate. Like, you can test your learning by applying to a certificate program to be certified. Like, I know that there's some way, for example, that you can do a self-study and pay to take the bar or something like that. Like, there's other ways. Like, you can apply to a place where you can test out of classes. Like, I think study.com for more general courses that you can transfer over into online universities, you can test out, And so if you're doing a self-study and you can go test out of 10 classes and transfer them over to an online self-paced degree program like WGU, like, that's testing and you didn't have to pay $180 a month and like all of these credits. So there's there's official ways to test your learning, but then there's also, is the information you're sharing with other people helpful? You know, right. It's like you think about the experts and who they are and what they're doing. They're writing books, sharing their information, and they're also reading them. So if you're reading what they're reading, then you're learning what they're learning. And how you make the information valuable is applying your own lived life and learned lessons to the information you're sharing. So you have to also put some respect on the time you've put in your life and your experiences, and make sure that reflects in how you're, you know, teaching what you've learned or sharing your information. And that's a good validator too. Is it helping other people?
Yeah. Especially if you're the one that's going around and, you know, assisting people, and you become a subject matter expert, you become a SME in that particular field, then, you know, if people are asking you the questions, then that's kind of your indicator. I know when I was, you know, early on doing a lot of things and learning just within the tech realm, I would create these little projects to do just to make my life easier. But, you know, I would go out and show it to other people and they would just be like, oh, wow. So that's, you know, another indicator that I think a lot of folks see as a way to say, you know, I guess what I did worked and I learned what I learned because I was able to kind of actually put it in something, you know, instrumental, like the creation of ChatGPT. You know, taking something that you learned and saying, you know what, I'm just going to kind of create my own and see where we go from there. But with that said, you've gotten your proof of concept. You understand like what things are and you're moving into the next level. And say you want to go and branch out into the career field and say, you know, I want to work specifically with AI, whatever sector within AI that you want. How would you kind of advise a star to translate what they've learned and done into what they could possibly do within a career opportunity?
So like a career opportunity, like something in AI, tell me more about your question.
Well, I mean, say that I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I've done all of these things. I've kind of put something together. I've done a lot of stuff where I've used AI to learn about that specific topic. In your example of baking a cake, I've learned all the things I need in regard to that. How would I go up to, say, you know, a bakery and then say, you know, I want to go to like an Erin McKenna type of place and learn on site or whatever, but obviously I don't have that formal credential or anything like that. I know these things. What would I do? Like, how would I like take that into going and asking for like real jobs doing things?
Yeah. I mean, I would say first, why not make your own job? Like, for me, I wouldn't go to a bakery. Yeah. I would open a bakery. I would be like, hey, I learned how to make these cakes and I put my special flavor on it. And I would just start selling cakes. You know, you obviously get your business license, get your food license, safety, you know, whatever else you need, how much you need to invest in, you know, ingredients and what's the area like, what are your competitors like. There's a ton of work that goes into opening a business, but I would just open my own cake business. But I know a lot of people don't feel that way and they feel like they have to maybe start out at some place that's more established. I would say like that's not a necessary step. If you are really passionate about what you're learning, you can be independent. But how do you sell those skills to a company? Well, when I first started recruiting, you know, I had never had a recruiting job before, but I was really passionate about photography. And some elements of being a photographer are very strongly related to recruiting. Like I was doing a lot of fashion shoots and I had to recruit models, hair, makeup. I had to go scout and find a location. I had to creatively design a brief, explain that to people, and creative direct, take the images, edit them, disperse them after. So that's a lot of project management. That's recruiting. That's people work. And translating those skills to a recruiting job, you have to tell the story. You have to let them envision you in that role and tell the story of why you're able to demonstrate those skills. So for me, I would say, like, I have been studying how to bake cakes for 6 months now, but a little bit differently because I've invested in these products and these ingredients, and I've found this way. Would you like a sample of something I've made? Because I want you to taste it and see if it's any good. But you know, most times when you're going into another company, they want you to make things their way. So it's like in the food industry, I don't know that they're looking for talent all the time, but they could be. They're probably more looking for labor, you know, like they have their brand on things. So with something you're passionate about, I would say make your own business. But yeah, translating your skills. Tell them.
Really, you know, do your own cake. Do a little catering.
Yeah.
Exactly. Get out there. Yeah. No, I love that. Because obviously you did that yourself. You know, you made your own. Which is kind of a breakaway from a lot of what, you know, I've seen other people offer. For myself, I started my consulting company because it's like I was giving the advice and I was helping these people out. And it was just like, well, start your own company. You don't have to like necessarily go work for someone else. And that's where it ended up leading me. So, but no, I love this. I love this advice because a lot of people who will be listening to the podcast are going to be like, where do I start? Mm-hmm. What do I do? Mm-hmm. What is my plan going forward? And I think starting your own business is great as far as being able to like create a business plan and do things in a very structured way. So
tap into the STARS resource library through Tear the Paper Ceiling, built to support STARS like you with real tools, guidance, and pathways forward. These resources are here for you to explore, learn, and use as you build what's next. Share your story. Get connected. Find community. We're building this movement together. And every star voice matters. Let's keep tearing the paper ceiling for good. Visit tearthepaperceiling.org/stars to get started.
I love where we've taken this conversation. Like you, I don't want to talk in a lot of circles. Ask the same question 567 different ways. But I feel like STARS are kind of at this critical point of being able to kind of lead this shift of being able to use something like AI to be able to kind of create their own pathway. What are some suggestions that you would give a STAR or even give a young Erin back when she was 15 years old? And say young Erin now has access to AI, has access to this stuff. What would you tell her? What are some words of wisdom and some knowledge you would draw?
Oh, my goodness. That's a really good, really good question. I would hope that somebody that young doesn't have to figure out how to use AI to support themselves. But if I was 15 with access to AI, I feel like, I don't know that it would matter that much to me because you're not, my entrepreneurial spirit was born out of surviving and trying to figure out how I was going to pay my bills and like be an adult. And I did start supporting myself at 17. So not that long after 15, I was still a kid in a lot of ways. But my entrepreneurial grit came from struggling. So I can't say that if I was young, I would understand the value of having this tool to get you ahead in situations where you need to provide for yourself. And so it's like, I think that's why it's a blessing to be born a Black person, because there's just certain things you're going to learn just from how the world has been shaped, and it's how you function and how you are driven. And it's like those unique things help me understand like why these tools are important. And I will say this, I would at least tell myself, don't take it for granted. I say that all the time in my talks. I say, you know, I don't believe we will always have access to a Claude, to a ChatGPT. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it makes the most sense. I think it's a huge experiment on society. Some people are learning how to make money from it and cashing in. It's called riding the wave. In a way, I'm doing that, even though I'm not trying to build a tool that I sell. But I still get paid to educate people about the technology. So I feel like it's not going to be around forever, though, not like this. And an example is Sora. Sora, I think just a few days ago, got taken off the market.
It's gone now.
Exactly. Yeah. And so just like that, what you have had access to that was so incredible, so amazing, is gone. And it shuttered a lot of businesses. It shuttered a lot of startups that were using an API that connected back to Sora. And so do they still have all of the things that they created? Absolutely. But they can't continue to create. So I would tell my 15-year-old self, you know, like, if you have a business idea, use the AI to create a business plan about it or a learning path. Like, set it somewhere in a doc or export it, print it out, anything, so that you have that. Like, if AI went away today, I would still benefit from it because I've asked it so many questions about systematizing my own success or explored my ideas in deeper ways or, you know, created these learning paths. So even if it stopped working, I would still benefit. So yeah, those are some of the things I would maybe think about bringing up. But it's hard. That's a tough question. That's a really good question.
Oh, thank you. I learned it from my days of doing a little bit of journalism for a Black-owned newspaper in St. Louis. Yeah, I asked them. I basically knew the editor, and there were a few tech things going on, and they were never in the paper. And I was like, "Do you have a tech writer?" And he was like, "No." And I was like, "Do you want one?" And he said, "Yes."
I love it.
So he was like, "Send me some samples." So I sent him some samples, and then he just was like, "Okay, we're going to pay you XYZ to go out on these different things and cover this." So I was like, I got to be one of those writers to figure out a question that I would ask people. So that's usually where I go. To me, 15 is the age where you're like cognizantly aware that you need to start making decisions about your future. Before then, it's like you're kind of just riding the wave. You're in school. You're doing what your parents tell you or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like 15 is that age where you're just like, I need to wake up. And actually look at, you know, what my next few years might look like. That's kind of why I chose that. But thank you. Thank you. I do want to ask one other question, again, going off script, as I usually do. I noticed that you are a guest lecturer on responsible AI. Mm-hmm. And I've been following people like Timnit and other folks who are, basically, you know, beating the drum of needing to say a lot more about how we're not very responsible for it. Full disclosure, I worked with a company for a little while freelance where I did some data analyst type stuff. Was going through and refining some things about the AI, and I had to test it. Under, you know, different code names. And I would ask it things. And I just said, you know what? It's good on math and science and all of these other things. Let me ask it, you know, some things about Black people or about women. And lo and behold, the information was incorrect. And I was fortunately on the end where I could actually put in the correct answer, put in the resources and say this needs to be changed. But I was thinking I'm one of, I don't know, a thousand people who are probably on here right now that is actually thinking this way to make the change, to ask the questions and then be able to, you know, look up and source reliable references and then get that corrected. And that was making me very, very nervous and concerned about the future of where these AI tools were leading us. So with that said, I noticed that you do a lot of vocalization on that. So if you can lay down some tips, some information that you might have relayed in some of your courses or in some of the things that, you know, you've like assignments that you've given, well, I would love to kind of be able to have that dropped here on the podcast for those who are listening and curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have been very honored to serve in three different classrooms at the University of Washington. These are marketing classes, comms classes, classes that are going to be asked to use AI probably by their employers or encounter AI in their field inevitably. And so what I do is I come in and I try to share with them everything I know, really, just like what are the common pitfalls, why you can never just trust AI to give you output and like run with it and just publish it. You know, I talk about bad headlines. I talk about subtle biases. I talk about more blatant contemporary context flaws. I talk about why I built ChatBlackGPT, how they can maybe think about building their own versions that they may need, and like why different voices in tech, in the tech that they're going to be using in the future, like matter now. You know, there are large companies out there using ChatBlackGPT for whatever reason. I know a lot use it for Black History Month programming, Women's History Month programming. It works for really anything culturally relevant. So it's like you learn how to use tools that are catering to your writing needs and your marketing needs. So I just teach people how to interact with AI responsibly in those realms, which is generative AI. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And you said ChatBlackGPT is available right now for anybody who wants to use it or dive into it. Is there like a specific website?
So
that I went to, I've like figured it out, but I don't know if there's like an official site or official way to find out more about ChatBlackGPT.
Yeah. I mean, chatblackgpt.com is fine, or just finding me on LinkedIn is even better. I talk about a lot of things, not just AI, but life and work in the city and being a parent and AI and how it affects society, all of these things. So right now I decided that my app that I built with my team is in research and development because I wanted not just to have ChatBlackGPT as something that is just out there and working. I want to set the standard for what cultural relevance is for the Black community in all large language models. And so we're benchmarking with two PhD Black women scientists, really, and software engineers. What are common knowledge and social values for Black people in America? What is that? And how can we build a benchmark for large language models based off of that information? So we are doing a lot of work creating and building these surveys that will go out to different segments of our populations. And we're going to set the standard first we know it works. We know it's important to people, but now we're going to go make sure other people can implement it too. And so right now I would encourage people to use the beta, which is available through ChatGPT in the GPT store. It's free. The other one is also still going to be free when it's re-released. Yeah, so you just go to GPTs, search GPTs, and search Chatback GPT beta. You'll probably see about 25,000 other people there. And yeah.
Including me. That's on there. I found mine because I had paid for my ChatGPT subscription, and I just did a search and found it. But yeah, thank you, Erin, for taking some time with us today. For those of you who are like listening in, she's got this wonderful background of like a fireplace going. I feel very zen right now. But it's been a pleasure talking with you about AI, about like the evolution of it, where it's going, some of the things the stars can take advantage of and use to kind of, you know, shine their light. And I will be visiting your bakery when you open it.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Erin. As we close out today's conversation, one thing is clear. The future of learning doesn't belong to a single path, a single institution, or a single definition of success. It belongs to those who are willing to build it for themselves. What Erin shared with us today is a reminder that you don't have to wait for permission to grow. You don't have to fit into a system that wasn't designed with you in mind. And with tools available today, especially AI, you can take ownership of your learning, your skills, and your future. And for stars, that's powerful. Because when you build your own curriculum, you're not just learning, you're redefining what qualified looks like. You're proving that skills, experience, and determination carry just as much weight as any degree ever could. So wherever you are in your journey, take this as a sign. Start where you are, use what you have, and build what you need. And we're not done yet. Our season 2 finale, episode 5, is on the way. We'll be diving even deeper into how stars are using AI as a true co-pilot across industries. You won't want to miss it. If this episode resonated with you, make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite platform. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. And we just launched a Substack that allows you to connect with us in our community. Share it with someone in your network and leave us a rating or a review. It helps more stars find their way to these conversations. Until next time, keep learning, keep building, and keep tearing the paper ceiling.